So this guy was a true artist, sculptor.
Yes, absolutely amazing. But when I first met him, he had a different wife. He had a wife named Laverta. And his name is Laven, her name is Laverta, and they were standing together, and when I first met him, he's up on this 30-foot sculpture carving away. He's standing with each foot on a forklift, and they're going back and forth towards the sculpture, then away from it so he could get the perspectives right. He's got a 7-foot chainsaw in one hand, and he's flailing through the pieces, and the sawdust was going for 2 city blocks. I remember I took pictures of all of it. And 2 city blocks, the sawdust was landing away. And as he drove back and forward, he turned around, he's yelling at her, "Woman, keep it steady!" And he's up there standing on the forklift. And what she's doing is she's driving over the pieces of wood that he had just cut away. So the forklift is all over the place. The top of the forklift is going left and right and forward and back. And so he's yelling at her to keep it steady, but she can't because there's no way to keep it straight. But anyway, that's my first impression, my first influence was him being on this forklift carving away and making this amazing sculpture that I ended up buying. But then at the very end, that woman, Laverta, his wife, they had their own original tribe. They renamed themselves their own tribe. They were called Two Feathers, and they actually had a tattoo on each one of their faces that was a feather, a couple of feathers. But when they put it together, when they stood cheek to cheek, it turned into a different image altogether. It was absolutely fascinating. The only time I've ever seen in my life a couple, they had 2 separate tattoos that when it went together, it made something else.
That's cool.
And I took pictures of all of it, you know, best I could or whatever. I still got them someplace. And I took pictures of Two Feathers and her smile, and they're just in love. You could tell. But she wanted a child, and he didn't want nothing to do with it because he had different ideas. And it turned out later, I found out, unfortunately, that one of the magics, one of the things about their stuff was that his stuff was getting worse and worse. As I come back to buy another piece, it looked kind of hokey. You know, the noses weren't right. The eyes weren't correct. You know, things were starting to distort on the sculptures. And I tried to narrow down what it was, and later I found out that she actually had carved them. She was the number one artist. She
really?
Was the most fascinating artist I've ever seen in my life. A chainsaw sculptor like nothing you've ever seen in your life. And she would carve away, but he was too proud to let anybody know that she had done it. So he would just add a little bit of stuff to the end of it and put his name on it.
So all those carvings were really done by her?
They were mostly done by her, most of the carvings. And he would carve any of the big stuff and block it out. And then she would come in with her little saws and she'd finish it up. And they were fascinating. One of the ones I got to say, picture a native face with a big headdress on it. You know what they look like, a big giant war bonnet, you know, a headdress. But when you turn the piece around, on the inside of it was a woman holding a child on the back of this piece. But when you hold it up to the light, you can see through it. It was so thin. And both sides were carved by a chainsaw by her. The pieces were so fascinating that, you know, not only did I take pictures of every one of them and love them, but I couldn't even obtain them because by that time they're usually owned by a store and they would go from $5,000 to $50,000. The store owns them now, you know what I'm saying? And they would use them to draw people in to buy crap made in China, you know what I'm saying? But they used the big sculptures to stop the tourist buses and stuff to come into their little shops and buy up all the crap or whatever, you know. So
with the people lining up wanting to go into the teepee, how much money did you make doing that?
Before the woman showed up with a clipboard, it wasn't a lot, you know, so it was just maybe about $1,000 or $2,000. You know, and I was selling the pieces that were made by white folks up north, and they were banging off as fast as I could bring them out of the truck, like always. And then the people were lined up around the block. It was going to be a fortune made, you know, so there's no doubt about it in my mind. But she shows up, she was less than 10 people into it with her clipboard. So she snaps them away. And at that moment, he didn't want nothing to do with me because I was only making $500 a week, which is more than he'd ever make in the North because there's just no avenue to sell his art.
All right, so you became a chainsaw artist. How did you learn how to do it?
I did what he was doing. You know, I watched him do it or whatever. So like everything in my life, if I see somebody do something, I can do the same thing. You know, I can just watch it long enough to say I have the confidence to try it. And I was 40 years old by the time that I'd had to start sculpting myself. By the time we got the teepee down there, I was probably about 37 or 38 years old. So I'd never held a chainsaw in my life. And so I wanted to figure out how to do it without hurting myself. So I spent one whole year of my life going to every single artist that I could find, every single chainsaw, even the guys that trim trees, and I'd ask them, "Hey, do you have any scars?" And every one of them had scars. "Oh, yeah, I got cut right here, 150 stitches. I got cut right here, lost my ear, you know, this, that, this." And so I tried to narrow down what it is that hurt them. And so I found myself trying to figure out exactly what would go wrong with each one of these accidents, and I found out and decided not to do the same mistake.
What do you find was the biggest mistake?
Oh, it's so funny, because when you buy a brand new chainsaw, they're very expensive, very dangerous tools, and the very first, when you open up the owner's manual, it says, you know, "Welcome for buying a steel chainsaw, thank you very much," and it says the very first thing in the instruction booklet is, number one, keep both feet on the ground. and that become the number one reason people got hurt is they had one or two or all their feet off the ground or whatever. They had put one foot up on the work to work on it, you know, so to hold it down steady, or they were standing on a ladder, which is a big, big mistake, or they would get on a scaffold or whatever it was that people would take the chainsaws to the trees in their yard, and that would be the biggest mistake because it would take both feet off the ground. Some of the rules in the books, the brochures, it says keep both feet on the ground. Never let anybody watch you do while you're doing this. You know, when you're doing chainsaw work, don't let anybody watch you do it. This is talking about when you buy a skill saw from the regular store right now. The owner's manual tells you certain warnings, and one of them is don't let people watch you while you're chainsawing
because it's a distraction.
No, the piece of wood might fly at them.
Oh, I see.
See, there's dangers involved. The chain might fly off. You could kill somebody with a chain, you know. Mm. So the idea is that don't stand there and watch somebody doing it. You know, that's the number three rule. And so I found it interesting that, you know, here's these rules and they seem so mundane and so ridiculous, you know, like they're trying to cover their ass or whatever. But really, it is the number one reason that people get hurt. So then after a year of learning that information, I started in on it and I started sculpting.
Where were you in San Diego?
No, I took off to the north so I could be with the wood. And I have to this day the first piece that I ever made. I can show you. It's a piece 4 feet long by 3 feet high by 3 feet wide. It's a huge piece. So I'll tell you how I started with the first piece. It's a great story. I think you'll love it. I went up to the north, and I brought with me everything from the store I think I needed. You know, so I had the store going on, another store, of course, this years later since I had my first original one. So I had another store, and I says, what am I going to need in the north to survive? I know it's cold, so I took 5 or 6 pairs of blue jeans off my shelves, and I took T-shirts. All my life, I would wear a T-shirt until it got dirty and then throw it away. Even at my yard sales today, I'd still wear a T-shirt or a pair of pants, and when it gets dirty, I just throw it away because most of the time, you can't clean it, embedded dirt or whatever. I'm so filthy all the time. So I took some T-shirts and some jeans, and I went to the north, and I'm supposed to go to a place in the north where they have a gift shop, and the guy, I called him up because I traveled back and forth, and I talked to him on one of the ways through. I called him up and says, okay, I'm ready to chainsaw. I've been, you know, studying for a year to see where the hazards are. Now I'm ready to go for it. He says, well, come on up. We need you in front of the gift shop so that you can stop the tourists, you know, to come into the store. And I says, okay. And it's free. And he says, yeah. He says, but when you sell a piece, I want a little bit. I want like maybe 10% or something. I said, that's fine. If he says, if I sell a piece for you, I want 10%. And I says, what if I sell it myself? He says, well, then I won't charge you. And I said, that's fine. I said, that sounds like an agreeable thing that I would do for any of the natives or any of the people that sculpt. So I went up to him, and I was driving there, and it was so far away, 700 miles away. So I was driving, and I was getting closer, and I'm driving through the redwood forest itself. There's this primeval redwood groves up there that are absolutely fascinating. I don't know if you've ever seen them before, but there are huge, giant trees that are 10 feet across or 20 feet across and 400 feet tall, some of them, 65 feet around. And sometimes they're growing in a position where they have to make the freeway to go around it. And it's in a spot, and they're protected, so you can't level the tree to go around it with a road. So the roads are built all around these little groves, and you drive through them, and, of course, the freeway eventually bypasses it. And you could get off the main freeway and drive through these groves. And I went there, and I wanted to go to his shop, which is off one of the grove roads. And I'm driving through the grove itself, and it's real late at night. It's 12 o'clock at night. And I have strapped to the top of my camper truck a boat. I wanted to take a canoe with me so I can go do the rivers and have fun. And it was wired down to the truck with two wires in the front of it, little cables that held it to the front of my bumper. And as I was driving through the woods at 12 o'clock at night, I look up. It's so dark, you can't see stars. There's no moon. There's no light whatsoever because it's blocked off by these wonderful trees, you know, the redwood trees. So I'm driving through the heavy woods, and I see a bunch of leaves flying in front of my truck. They're falling from one side to the other onto the ground. And I thought, wow, where the hell would all these leaves be coming from? At the same time, it's 12 o'clock at night, and there's no wind. So I drive, and I ran right through the bunch of leaves, and one of them was a bat. It's actually bats that were flying by, and one of them hit the wire on my cable, and it slapped against my windshield right in front of my face. And it was shocking, to say the least, to see a bat all of a sudden whack right in front of me, right on the windshield. So I says, holy shit, it's a bat. And it looks like I might have killed it, you know, but I'm only about a half a mile away from where my destination was. So I kept going, and then I also thought about getting out and having a bunch of bats all around me as they're flying through the woods. So I kept going, and I come out into a clearing where you have a little township with about 200 houses all together, and their porch lights and stuff were so bright compared to the woods that I could actually see what's going on. So I pull over at the spot that I'm supposed to be in front of the gift shop. I can see it. And then I get out, and I'm looking at the bat. You know, it's kind of stuck on my windshield, and I'm poking at it with a stick. I says, I think it's dead. It's not alive for sure. So I went into the back of my truck, and I slept because I was exhausted after driving that many hours. And when I woke up, there was a person. His name was Joe. They call him Smokey Joe, or they call him Mountain Joe. And he's a big bearded white guy, kind of skinny with the long beard, long hair. And he's standing there, and I wake up, and I look out my little window, and here's this guy you know, scratching his beard and examining the bat on my windshield. So I come out of the back of the truck. I say, hey, what's going on? He says, how you doing? My name's Joe. And I said, how you doing, Joe? And he says, what is that on your window? I says, it's a bat. He says, no way. And I says, he said, why do you got it right there? And I says, because I went through the woods and I hit it with my wire. See, the wire is a little bloody right there, and it slapped onto the windshield. And he says, that's cool as shit. He says, can I have it? And I said, sure, you can have it, Joe. So he took it off my windshield, and he's stretching the wings, and, wow, I got a bat, he says, you know. So he ran off into the woods, and so he was to come up later, you know. Later he comes back into my campsite almost every day. He comes to see what I got going on, because to the people of the north, you know, that was a fascinating thing to see a sculptor, an artist, and all that stuff show up in their little town. It's going to make their town. It's going to actually bring tourism and bring some sort of production into their little village where they can recognize that I'm something to covet. I'm somebody to cater to whatever I need. They're going to get it for me so that I stay there, you know, so they want me to be there. So anyway, so he comes back in the next day or two, and he's looking at my truck and all my stuff as I'm unpacking and getting ready, and he sees the jeans behind my seat that are stacked up to the eye level. He says, what's that back there, Mike, that blue thing? I says, you know, because it's a folded jeans, all you see is the fold. So I says, them are blue jeans, Joe. And he says, can I take a look at one of them? And so I pull it out, and he says, those are what Levi's look like when they're brand new, because they still have the stickers on it and shit, you know. So he says, Joe, you can have one of those. He says, no way. So anyways, to make my story a little short or whatever, I made another piece. I sculpted a piece of wood that was rotten on the bottom, and it didn't work out so good. I gave up on the sculpture, but when I stood back and looked at it, I was trying to make a face. And when I looked at it, it looked like Joe. You know, looked like this guy with the beard and stuff. So he comes back in to visit me, and I says, hey, Joe, I made this for you. And he looks at me, he says, no way, can I have it? And I says, yeah. So he takes it. And so about a month in this carving at this location, they come to me, and he says, hey, Mike, my wife invited you to come over to have some dinner. And I says, Joe, I've been here for a month. I don't even know where you live. He says, I live in that trailer park over there. You know, there's a little trailer park. He says, I live in number 22. Come on over. We're going to cook some dinner. And I says, all right, I'll be nice and try to see what's going on. You know, usually I'm eating at restaurants every day, you know, so kind of burning out on that. So I go over to see Joe at his campsite, number 22 trailer. And it's one of those trailers that's called the Bachelor, where there's only room enough for one bed in it. And I says, wow, talk about minimal living, you know. But right then he's got a couple friends over, and they're drinking a beer. And he says, hey, guys, you want to see my bat? So he pulls out the bat out of the trailer, and he shows it. Look at that. You know, ooh, they're all looking at it. And I look inside the trailer, and hanging on the wall is the pair of Levi's. I says, Joe, you got the Levi's hanging out? Yeah, those are brand new. You guys want to see my Levi's? Check this out. This is what Levi's look like when you buy them brand new. And he pulls it out of the trailer, and he shows all the guys his brand new pair of Levi's. I says, Joe, you don't wear them? He says, no, man, they're too cool.
Becomes art.
I just show it to them. You know, so I just show it to my friends, and they've never seen it. I'll touch it. Oh, they're stiff. You know, they're really neat. I laughed. I thought, man, that is so funny. So anyways, I turned to the village people. I'm desperate for wood. I'm stuck in my little spot trying to carve. And I turned to the village people and says, guys, I need wood, you know. So every one of the damn townspeople, about 20 of them that live there, go racing out into the woods to bring me back chunks of wood. And it was so funny because they line up, and each one of them has a piece of wood. Maybe it's a log, or maybe it's a big piece of beam or
you
whatever.
You pay them for it?
I paid them. So they all stand in line. I says, what do you want for it? And he says, I want a dollar. And I said, give him a dollar. I says, what do you want for that piece? That's a big one. He says, I want $2. And so I give him $2. And so I get to the end of the line, and they're all walking away with their money and stuff. And I turn to this guy that's with me that's kind of helped me out and, you know, working with the wood and stuff. And I says, $2 for a piece of wood? What's that about? And he says, that's how much a six-pack of beer costs. Of course, you know, it makes sense whenever we're going to go buy beer. You know, every one of them runs over to the little county store and buys beer, you know.
So how long were you there, and how many carvings were you doing there?
What I did was I showed up, and what the guy did with the shop right there is he built was big pieces of telephone pole, made up a big square structure that was 20 feet by 30 feet by 50 feet, and he had shade cloth on it so that I had a place to be out of the elements, because it's very hot, you know, so it's 100 degrees, and so they should be in the shade, so I could work out there, and it's all screened so that the wind could blow through and I could breathe and everything else. So he made that for me so I would stay, of course, you know, and he says, here you go, you can work right here, and I says, all right, thanks. So I started to buy pieces of wood from the natives, the local people, and they're bringing me chunks of wood and stuff, and they bring it on top of the cars. They're so funny. They go out in the woods and come back with a log strapped on the top of their car, you know. It's going to ruin your car. They says, I don't care. Give me some money. I says, here you go, you know. So I'm buying up all the pieces I can make, and I made about 100 pieces. Inside of a week, I had already started to accomplish some wonderful pieces because I found myself really talented at this thing. I didn't realize that I was going to be good at it, but I started to crank them out, and I turned to the guy that owned the shop, and he's getting a little jealous because I've already got pieces accomplished. I'm selling them, and he's not able to sell them. I bring them in the store, but I'm selling them faster than I can make them. You know, I'm selling them before they're even made, just like I was buying them up there. And so he's getting a little jealous. He's a little bit irritated that, you know, I'm doing really well, and he's been at it for 25 or 30 years, and he's going nowhere. His expertise was to make slabs out of woods, out of burl and stuff. So he'd slab up pieces of wood, but they weren't selling like these carvings were. And at the same time, he sees my demand for wood or whatever. So I turned to him, and I says, hey, I can't remember his name, Dave, I guess it was. So I says, can you get me some wood? And he had trucks that were capable of hauling huge pieces of wood because they had winches, cables, you know, booms and everything else on it, everything you need to pull up heavy pieces of equipment. So he says, all right, I'll get you a piece of wood, you know. So he goes and he comes back with this piece of wood. What they did in this other town is they take these huge giant stumps, and every year they try to burn them to get rid of them. So they pour gas all over them, start them on fire, they burn them during the rainy season, and then when it gets dry season, they have to put them out, and then they wait till the next year and burn them again. So he brought me back this piece of charcoal, and inside of it was what's called the crown of a tree. It's actually where the tree connects to the root, and mm-hmm. it's a big crown. And he drops that in the middle of the freeway, right on the street, and he says, there's your piece of wood. And it's so dirty charcoal that it falls on the street, and a bunch of it falls off. And I says, damn, I'll break my saw, my brand new saws that I spent about $5,000 to buy all the different saws. I says, I'll ruin my saw with all that damn charcoal on it. And he says, well, do whatever you want. There's your wood. You asked for wood. There it is. What I did is I took a pickaxe and I sharpened the pickaxe and I started hacking away at the charcoal so I could get down to the wood. And so I whacked down to the wood or whatever, and it was still in the middle of the street. I couldn't move it. It was too heavy. So I tried to hook a winch to it and try to pull it over, but I couldn't do it. So I said, I better carve it right there, you know. I said, I better take off some of the weight, you know. So I started hacking away at this thing, you know, my big saws or whatever, now that I'm down to the wood. And the wood is absolutely purple. It's beautiful, different grain patterns and stuff. Where the tree comes together with the root, it's very dense, you know, because you have tons of tree pushing down on it and tons of roots pushing up on it. So it's very dense wood. And it actually picks up little stones in it and stuff, you know, it grows right into the wood as it grows. Anyway, so I'm carving away on this thing, and I get it down to some point where it looks kind of hokey, but it's actually a donkey, and it looks like he's standing in weeds up to his ankles because I didn't know how to do a hoof, so, and I don't know how to do a face, so I put all of its mane hanging down in front of his face. So when it's all done, it looks like Winnie the Pooh, the little...
Yeah, Eeyore.
Eeyore, yeah, it looks just like that, but I couldn't carve some of the side of it away. It was too much charcoal and stuff. So what I did is I carved into the side of it a coin slot like I grew up with as a child growing up in Chicago. They had the things out front of grocery stores, and you put a quarter and you put them back then, you put a dime or a nickel in it, and it would rock. So as I got into this wood, I carved one of those little change boxes. So it looks like you can put a quarter and it'll drop in there, and it has a little coin return button on it, and, you know, that type of thing on the side of this piece of wood. And the whole thing was starting to get accomplished. It looked like Ewok with a little change thing on them. And I look at the wood and it starts to crack. It's cracking apart. Millions of little cracks are showing up in the saddle part of it. I made a saddle on top, real smooth and stuff. And so I'm looking at the cracks, and I asked one of the townspeople right there, I said, where are all these cracks coming from? He says, well, Mike, that wood hasn't been exposed in 10,000 years. You know, you're opening it up the first time to oxygen, and it's just cracking from the sun. I said, well, how do I stop it? It's going to ruin the piece. And so they says, well, you could put this varnish on it, this certain kind of thing called logwood oil, but it's actually like a hard spar varnish. And he says, you can put this on it. I says, well, I guess I'm done with it, so I can finish it. You know, I painted it with this varnish, and it made it very wet look to it. It's very slippery, wet, dark. You know, it looks like it's a varnished piece of furniture. So as I'm varnishing it or whatever, this woman pulls up in a brand new Jaguar. She's coming from San Francisco, which is 500 miles to the south, and she's 500 miles north going through the woods doing her thing. She's parked in the middle of the freeway. She comes out of the car. The freeway is a two-lane road that goes down into the woods, and no cars go down there, but maybe two cars a day will go by. So there's no traffic at all. So she stops right there. She's dumbfounded by the piece, jumps out of the car. She runs over to her. She says, oh, my God, that's absolutely beautiful. It's fascinating. She says, would you sell it to me? And so right then the townspeople and the guy that brought me the wood are standing there leaning against the post watching me do my varnish on it. And there's probably five of them all together, you know, these little local town people. Anyway, so they can overhear the conversation. And so I says out loud to her so they can hear it. I says, well, what do you give me for it, ma'am? And she says, I'll give you $2,500 for it right now. And, you know, I look over and all the jaws are to the ground. So to me it was on the 10th day that I carved them in 10 hours. And he had varnish on him, so he was finished. And I had a potential to sell him for $2,500 to the city woman, you know what I'm saying? So I says, no, ma'am, you can't have the piece. I'm going to take it home to my mother. And she says, okay, I understand, you know. I said, this is my first one, you know, so I don't want to give it up, you know. So she says, oh, it's fine. Foolishly, I didn't get her number. I should have, of course, got her number and made her another one, you know, but I didn't do that. So she jumps back in her Jaguar and she drives away, and I was satisfied with the value of it. And it's an accomplishment. It was, to me, Jackson Pollock, where he says, yeah, it is art. So even though it wasn't finished, you know. And I look over at the townspeople, and they were just totally freaked out. They're freaking out because I didn't take the $2,500. Why did you take $2,500? That thing's a piece of shit. It's got no face on it. It's got no feet. It's ridiculous. You know, I says, well, it has a big value. You know, my mother's going to love it. You know, so saying them later, I packed it on the truck and took it north. But I have a picture of me sitting there after 2 weeks, and I held up two fingers to show those 2 weeks, and I had about 100 pieces around me, you know, that I'd carved up in 2 weeks or whatever, you know, each one of them valuable enough to sell to the next tourist that sees it, you know. So.
Did you sell them all there?
Well, what I did was on the second week, I was out there working away, and this guy comes down the road, and he's driving a huge front loader. It's a big shovel, giant tires that are bigger than me, and he's coming down the freeway, they call it the freeway, down the road right there, and he stops, he slams on the brakes in this thing, and he looks over, he goes, wow, and he jumps off, and he's looking at all the pieces and stuff. He says, man, they're all made out of redwood, and I says, yeah, and he says, do you want some more wood? I says, yeah, I could sure use some more wood, you know what I'm saying, because I'm already running short, you know, and I'm buying it from the townspeople, but they're bringing me pieces of junk and wood that's not even redwood, any piece of wood, and they're being demanding, give me it all, and I said, oh, shit, you know, so I gave him a few bucks for every piece of wood they gave me. So anyway, this guy says, you need some more wood? And I says, yeah, I can sure use it. And he says, I'm working on the freeway up here. I'm part of the construction crew. I said, yeah. And he says, we got some wood that fell down. You want it? And I said, hell yeah. So he drives up the road. He comes back down with the loader, and he's got 10 trees on the front of the loader. 10 trees, each one of them about 50 feet big, you know, and 50 feet long. He's coming down the freeway. Of course, it takes up all the lanes. And I says, oh, my God, here he comes. Look at this wood, you know. And I says, man, there's enough wood to do some serious carving, you know. So he comes over. He says, where do you want it? And I says, over there in the field. And so he drops it off, 10 trees. And he says, you want some more? And I says, well, how many more do you got? He says, maybe 500 or 600.
Oh, my God.
I says, are you shitting me? He says, yeah, I got about 500 or 600. We're going to take it to the dump if you don't want it. I says, you bring it right here, mister. No problem at all. So he says, all right, this is a lot shorter distance to haul it than the dump, you know. So up the road he goes. And this time he comes back. He's got 10 more trees on the front of the loader. And this time he's got his crew. There's 5 guys, mostly Mexicans, that were working the crew. You know, they all got the same shoes and construction stuff. So they come back up to see what I'm doing, you know. So he says, yeah, come on, check this out. So he brings all 5 of the guys up, and they jump off the truck, and they come running over. Now he's dropping the second 10 trees in the field. And I says to him, I says, do the guys want one of these things? And he says, yeah, you know, every one of them says, yeah, I could give that to my mom, you know. So I says, you guys can have them all. So I gave away most of the pieces that I accomplished, you know, about 20 or 30 pieces right there that I could part with, besides the 10 I wanted to keep for my parents. And so they took all the pieces and ran off into the woods, and the guy came back with 600 trees and put them all over this field, and they were piled up all different precarious sticking out positions. You know, there's roots sticking out one way and points of it sticking out the other. So I went out there and I went to work with my saw and started to lop them into 2-foot pieces, 4-foot pieces, 3-foot pieces, so that I could stand them up and start to make things out of them. You know what I'm saying? I was popping them out of the pile because they're too heavy to move around for me. And as I cut them, I would make it so that one would come out and another one come out. And so I got about 20 pieces stacked up so I could start to work on them. And right then, the native came that my friend Laban, the guy that does all the work and stuff, he shows up and he's happened to be traveling through to go sell some of his pieces that he'd made up in the north. He's going to go down to the gift shops and sell them to the gift shops to make some cash, because I wasn't buying them no more. I was up there making them instead, you know. So he comes and he's bummed out about me having to be up there, that he ripped me off for the money and stuff. I said, oh, don't worry about it. So he's looking at the pieces that I made, the accomplished ones that I had, the 10 of them left over for my parents. He says, hey, them are pretty good. Who made those? I says, I did. He says, no way. And he says, what are you doing with all this? And all the ones that were standing up there were just logs. They call them a cant. Anyway, so all these cants are standing. He says, what are you going to do with those? I says, I'm going to carve them up. He says, all of them? I says, yeah, because he's looking for the wood. He says, yeah, I'm going to carve them all up. He says, well, how many do you think you could do in a day? I says, well, how many do you make in a day? He says, I can make 8 pieces in one day, and I can sell them for at least $350 for all 8 pieces. I says, well, tomorrow I'll find out. I'll see how many I can carve in one day. He says, okay, I'll come on by tomorrow on the way back from the gift shops. And I says, okay. So he takes off with his truck and his wife, and they go towards the south. So now I'm working furiously. I want to get as many as I can to stand them up to see what I could do. I whacked up about 100 pieces of wood, stood them all up, up. And then what I would do is I fire up my saw and I walk down one whole length of it. I walk from one log to the next, chopping through it as fast as I can. You know, I was whack, 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 whack. And then I come down the other side, whack, 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 whack. And I wanted to keep it simple, so I wanted to make them all little bears and raccoons and bunnies and stuff like that. You know, just the faces on the log. So I started hacking away at them. And I worked from in the morning. And then the next day I wake up about 6 o'clock. I wake up the whole damn town with my saws, but they're used to the chainsaws up there. They love it. They want me to do whatever I want. So I'm waking them up at 6. You know, here we go. And I fired that saw up, and I worked all day long. And by the time it was dark, he shows up, and he says, "Well, Mike, how many did you make?" And I says, "I don't know. I didn't take a chance to count them. I just kept laying them down so I could get to the next one without hitting the last one with the saw. You know, I didn't want to bump into the last one with my chainsaw because it was flying around like a maniac, you know." And so they're all laying down in different positions. So he says, "Let's count them up." So he starts standing them up, and he's counting them. He says, 1, 2, 3, 4, 110. I says, 110? He says, "Yeah, 110. I says, "Man, oh, man, that's a lot of pieces." He says, "Yeah, but they're kind of hokey looking. This bunny's got funny looking ears, and this face on this bear isn't done right. You know, it looks a little bit like a square face." I says, "Yeah, but they're good enough. You know, so what I'm going to sell them for?" He says, "Well, what are you going to sell them for?" I said, "Maybe 20, 25 bucks. He says, "Well, good luck on that. Let me know tomorrow how many you sell." So I said, "All right." So the next day, I load 30 of them in my truck because that's all that'll fit in my little truck. I load 30 of them in there, and I take them to the gift shops. I take them to the first gift shop down the road 5 miles away. And I pull into there, and I says, "I got some carvings out here," and they all want carvings because they could either use the carving to sell it, or they could use it to draw people in to sell the China gift crap that they got. So they said, "Oh, what do you got?" And I says, "Well, come on out and take a look." So they come out to the truck, and they said, "Ooh, those are kind of rough." I said, "Listen, they're $20 each. Or if you buy 10 of them, you can have 10 of them for, I think I told them, $190 or some break on the price." And I says, "If you get a dozen of them, it's, I can't remember, like $200 for a dozen of them or something." So they said, "Really? So I'll take this one, this one, this one." And I says, "All right." You know, they're already picking. So I'm taking them out of the truck, and the first guy buys $200 worth, and I drop off the appropriate number for him. And so I says, "All right." So he gave me a check. "Do you mind taking a check?" I says, "Yeah, I know where you live." He laughs and says, "Okay." So he makes me a check. So I go to the very next gift shop with the ones that I have left over, and I pull in there, and I says, "Hey, you want to buy some carbon? What do you got?" And he comes out, and he says, "Man, those are kind of rough." I says, "The guy up the street, he bought a dozen of them. You know, he gave me $200 for a dozen." He says, "Well, I want a dozen." So he takes the next bunch. Now I have to go back to my shop and load up a bunch more so I can take it to the one that's another 5 miles away. So I basically loaded them all up and sold them all the next day, and I had checks and cash for $2,500, you know, say by the time I'm all done. So then the native shows up. It's dark again. He says, "Well, how many did you sell?" And I says, "I sold them all." He says, "What?" And I says, "I sold them all." He says, "Oh, bullshit." So I pulled out the checks and the cash and says, "Here's $2,500. I sold them all." He says, "Oh, my God." He sees the names on the checks were from all the gift shops. He says, "Man, the drive-thru tree bought 12, and, you know, the biggest tree in the world bought 12, and the living tree or whatever bought 12. I says, "Yeah, they bought them all." He says, "My God, that's fucking amazing." He says, "From now on, I'm going to call you Two Saws." And I said, "Two saws, what does that mean?" He says, "Well, you must have carved them with a saw in each hand to do 100 of them a day, you know."
Yeah, I like that, like two feathers.
So anyway, so then he dies away, and I wake up the next day, and I go up into the woods to do something or another. But now I've got 450 trees or so that are still left over my pile. And I go off into the woods to go enjoy my day because I made so much money the next day, and I'm exhausted, tired, I can't even move. And when I come back into my little camp that night, all my trees are gone. All the carvings are gone. Everything is gone from my space except for the big frame that I started with. And I said, "Oh, my God, they ripped me off." You know, I said, "That's a bunch of shit." You know, so I run around, and there's a couple townspeople standing there. And there's always someone standing around, you know, nothing to do or whatever, you know, they're chewing on chew or, you know, drinking a beer or something. I said, "Guys, what happened to all my stuff, man? I got ripped off for all my shit." And they says, "Oh, you'll never believe it, man. Everybody from town and everybody from the next town came over here, and they all took pieces." I says, "Pieces are the wood, you know. I mean, I had all these trees out there, 450 trees. Yeah, they chopped it up and took it away." I said, "What, just to steal from me or what?" And they says, "No, souvenirs." I said, "What do you mean, souvenirs?" He says, "Well, they found out you made like $3,000 or $4,000 in one day, and they all come down to see it, and they all took away a souvenir."
Oh, my God.
I says, "Are you kidding me or what?" I says, "Son of a gun." They had taken everything that I touched, you know, pieces that were just lopped off chunks of wood or mistakes or whatever it was later. They took every damn piece of it. And I says, "Damn, now I got to go find more wood, you know." And I says, "Well, sorry, man. We didn't know that that would be a big deal for you." I says, "Well, it's not. But at the same time, you know, I'm worried that I can't get enough wood." So I go off into the woods, and I come back the next day about 12 o'clock noon. And as I'm driving up to my space, there's like 30 people standing there, you know. So there's 30 people around my little area right there. And as soon as I got in the site, you know, my little truck come around the corner, and I got a bunch of wood on the back of my truck, and they start running towards me. You know, like on the Beatles movie where they got all the people running towards you. So I said, oh, my God, you know, I thought for sure they're going to beat me up or steal my wood or take my blue jeans or something or another. So I turned around and I beat it. You know, I went back into the woods as fast as I could drive, you know. So I says, oh, man, I can't even stop there no more. The people are going to do something to me. I don't know what. They're going to rip me off of my money or do something. I don't know what. You know, they're going to tear my shirt off or whatever they're going to do. So I drove away to the next town and set up at the next place and says, man, the last town over there, they went crazy, you know. And by the time I get to the next town, I've already got the reputation. Oh, you, Mike? You the guy that makes $5,000 a day? And I says, I don't make $5,000 a day. Where do they get these numbers, you know?
You the money man. I hope you're enjoying this interview. We have just wrapped up part 3. Please continue to part 4.